I'm Dawn. I'm an alcoholic. So, Marlon, thank you for asking me to speak. Yesterday I got the message, and I thought about it for a few minutes, and I'm like, you know what? I have a friend in town. Like, we're supposed to have dinner. Like, we have plans to have dinner. This is a great reason why I shouldn't go, you know, speak. To me, it made so much sense. And then I had to stop and remember, that's not what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. When you're asked to be of service, no matter what, you suit up and you show up. So it canceled my plans, and I'm here tonight. So thank you again. My sobriety date is February 4th of 2014. My home group is St. Pete Beach YPG. We meet Friday nights at 8 o'clock. It's kind of a lively group. It's super fun. You should come check it out. I have a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor women. Don't currently have any sponsees. They don't seem to stay sober, but I do. So what it was like. Sorry, when I get nervous or excited, my mouth dries like the Sahara, so bear with me. So I was born and raised in Jacksonville, just north of here. I come from a dysfunctional family, like most of us in the rooms. My dad was a raging alcoholic and addict and very, very violently abusive. So my mom decided she had enough of his stuff when I was about two. And so I was raised by a single mom who didn't really know how to cope with life. So she quickly became what I have now learned is a hard drinker. And so she really enjoyed hanging out in the bars. So that's where we would go hang out after school and after dance class and all that fun stuff. We'd go to the bars. And then I'd go see my dad every other weekend, and like I said, he was an alcoholic, so he would like to send me to the refrigerator to get him beer, but he liked it open upon delivery, and so I would pop the top, and of course it would fuzz, and you know, I'd like sip it, and it was the nastiest stuff in the entire world. I don't know if you've ever heard of Old Milwaukee. Absolutely horrific. But I mean, I did it every time, right? Like, I'd go to the refrigerator, get his beer, pop the top, sip it, take it to him. And so that was like my introduction to beer at a really early age. I never fit in. I always felt like different from everyone else. I didn't know how to do life, right? All of these things we hear time and time again, right? Like, that's what I love about this program is we all have very different stories, but they're so similar. And the great thing is we have a common solution, right? So we can still kind of identify, even if you coped very well in life and like you always felt like you fit in everywhere you go, there's something else I will say that you feel that you can relate to, because that's just how we are. So I was a very maladjusted child. I really just wanted to do what I wanted to do and when I wanted to do it. So by the time I was in fifth grade, I decided I didn't want to go to the daycare anymore because I was just too grown for them. And so I walked home, which was, I don't know, maybe like 5 miles. It took me a couple of hours. And I get home and I call my mom and I say, hey, guess where I'm at? And she's like, you better be at the daycare. And I'm like, no, I'm home. Not going back there. And so she got me the city bus pass. I started riding the city bus home because that's how I roll. What I want to happen, I will figure out how to make happen. Learned it at an early age. And so this is pretty much like my story. You know, just again, all of the isms, all of like the control, you know, all of the things. And so, you know, I had a few more run-ins with alcohol, nothing pretty severe until I was 14. Had my first drunk, and it's Mad Dog 2020. right? It's all you gotta hear, and you're like, ugh. Hit my tongue, burnt my throat, burnt my belly. But bro, did I love it. Oh my God, it was my solution. It was that moment. And my first drunk was a blackout. And I had really found my solution. I am a survivor of every form of abuse from a very, very early age. And by the time I got to my blackouts, it was glorious, right? Like, I could do and say whatever I want and not be held responsible or accountable for any of my actions. And I loved it. And, you know, I used to say, if you had my life, you would drink too, right? If you had my story, you would drink too. And I held on to that. And in my teens, like, I was never one of those that would drink whenever I could. I drank when I wanted to, and I made it happen as often as possible. I started skipping school, and my house became like the skip house. We would stop at one of the stores along the way, and I would wear some big baggy overalls and like stuff as much alcohol in my overalls and kind of like waddle out. Little tiny blonde, they don't really pay much attention to me. And we would just get drunk. You know, I'm a high school dropout, you know, just failed my first year of ninth grade, tried it again, hit 16, said, I'm done with that. Not doing that again. I went to, you know, I got my GED, and I always had a problem with relationships. Friend, romantic, family, you know, didn't matter what kind of relationship. I struggled with relationships. And I would be equated to, like, the Tasmanian devil. I would come into a circle of friends, I would spin around and cause chaos and cause commotion, and they would get tired of me, and I'd be like, okay, I'm out. Go get a new group of friends. And this was my pattern. I could shed, because whatever job I was working with that group of friends, quit my job, quit my friends, go get a new job, go get new friends. And that just became my thing. I would cut and I would run. And I wouldn't think twice about people. And all I needed was alcohol or drugs. That was my thing. You know, I put myself in some really, really bad, scary situations and didn't care. I'd wake up, not know where I was at, who that is, where my phone is, where my car is, how am I getting home, what side of town am I in Jacksonville anymore? It never knew, because I was a blackout drunk my entire drinking career. So from the age of 14 to 31 when I got sober, it was a big old blackout. Don't remember a lot of it. But the good thing is that the longer I stay sober, the more that comes back to me. And I know, my higher power knows what he's doing, because if I remembered all of it in the beginning, I wouldn't have stayed sober. In the end, it was, I drank because I had to, out of guilt, shame, and remorse, right? I would wake up hungover, feeling awful, feeling just awful about myself, vowing with a solemn oath that I wasn't going to do that again, not doing it again. And this is what makes me an alcoholic, right? So I'd wake up with that solemn oath, not doing that. I would obsess so hard. Okay, I'm not going to drink today. I'm going to drink. So what am I going to drink today? Okay, so it's a drinking day, because every day is a drinking day. All right, so what kind of day really is it? Is it a hard day? It's a really hard day. Okay, so today's a vodka day. Do I have vodka at home? No, I don't have vodka at home. Okay, so if I stop by this store on the way home, I can get this, and then I can get that over there, and then I can make sure I have ice, and then I can get home, and I can make that drink really quick, and I can go home and change. It should be semi-chilled by that time. And then I can drink. Okay, it's noon. 6 hours to go. And then I would just be miserable for those 6 hours. right? Like, God, is it over yet? And then those 6 hours would take a million years, because that's what happens in my brain. I can't be okay until I have a drink. Now, towards, you know, the last few years of my my drinking, I call myself an alcoholic and an addict. I'm fortunate in the fact that, you know, I never really did any hard drugs. I also knew that with my tendencies, if I did hard drugs, I would probably fall in love with them, and then that meant that I would probably not stop doing them, and that terrified me, because I knew my dad was an addict and an alcoholic. But I did start to doctor shop. So I would get dry goods from my doctors, because what I realized, like I had high anxiety at work, and so I started having panic attacks. So I would go to a doctor and they'd be like, oh my God, here's something to help you calm down and relax. And I really liked it, and I ate it like candy because it really made me relax. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's good. That eases it until I can get home. And then I ended up hurting my shoulder, and I went to the doctor, and he said, oh, it looks like that hurts. And I said, oh, it hurts terribly. He said, here, that'll help. And I said, oh, wow, that really helped. I really like that. I need more of that. I need more of both of those, because that takes the edge off when I can't have alcohol on my breath at work, because I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink at work. I don't live under a bridge and drink my alcohol out of a brown paper bag. I'm not an alcoholic. Certainly not true. And so, you know, as years went on, I mean, I can sit here and I can go over a drunkalog and tell you all the nasty, awful, horrible things I did. But what it boils down to is I did nasty, awful, horrible things. In my most basic self, I'm a liar, I'm a cheater, and I'm a thief. And I am an awful, awful, mean, angry person. And if you say something to me that I don't like, even if I don't know you, I can figure out what to say to really cut you. And if I succeed and you get defensive, here we go, it's a good time, we're gonna have a back and forth, and it's gonna fuel me. That's the kind of human I am in my basic core. And alcohol just amplifies that, right? Like, when I would drink, I would be 6 feet tall and just either gorgeous and beautiful. Not the case. Most of the time I had like the yucky mascara, and you know, I looked atrocious, but in my mind I was gorgeous, or I was the Hulk. And it didn't matter what size you were, I would try you. That led me to a very, very abusive relationship. Several, actually. Because the truth is that I always felt less than. I couldn't look people in the eye. I hid my uselessness behind anger and fear and rage. And I would, this was my camouflage, right? Like, I was very confrontational. And so, like I said, it put me in some really, really bad places. I would come to and I would have bruises all over me. I, you know, ended up with my two front teeth cracked, my jaw realigned, my nose broken, you know, all kinds of really nasty, awful things. And, you know, towards the end of my drinking, I became extremely suicidal. I didn't want to live. I was married with 3 stepkids with a very chaotic house, because his mom, his father, and his grandmother lived with us. So we had a really full house, and it was always chaotic, and I hated life, and I didn't know what the escape was. I didn't want to get divorced because I never wanted to get married, and I never wanted to have kids, and lo and behold, here we go. So I became very suicidal, and I had many attempts. Thank God they were failed attempts, because You know, I couldn't figure out why. Like, why can't I succeed? Why can't I just do something right and just, you know, succeed at something? And I'll never forget, someone told me, God has bigger plans in store for you. Just be patient. I didn't know what that meant at the time. I mean, we're talking 2 years before I even got sober. And so I'm going to skip forward because my favorite part to talk about is sobriety. So I tried to get sober May of 2013. And like I said, I was living in this house, chaos. I knew that I had a problem. I mean, I was checking my eyes in the morning to see if they were yellowing because I know that's jaundice and I know that means I have a problem. My eyes never yellowed, but I knew I had a problem. And, you know, a suicide attempt brought me in on my knees and I felt like I belonged. I felt like my first meeting, like I knew you were my people. I knew this is where I was supposed to be. And that first meeting I walked into, I made it my home group. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. You know, got the service commitment at my home group. Like I went to a meeting every day. I did everything you people told me to do, and I stayed sober for 7 months and blinked my eyes, and I was back to the races and couldn't figure out why. It's because I never conceded to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic and an addict, and I cannot ingest alcohol and drugs. Didn't get it. Also had that reservation. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I'm just bipolar. I take medication that doesn't agree with the alcohol. I overreacted. I can drink successfully like a lady. Second night I was back out, I drank myself into alcohol poisoning for an entire weekend. And while I'm laying there and I can't keep water or food down, all I can think about is, this is a terrible date. This is not going to be my new sobriety date. This is an awful date. It was like December 18th or something. If that's your sobriety date, I apologize. It's not an awful date. That's my insanity. Yeah, and so, like I said, January 1st is the great epic sobriety date. That's going to be my sobriety date. That was a fail. Shot right past that. Went to February 4th, again, suicide attempt on February 3rd. Woke up, husband said, can't live like this. I don't know if you're gonna, if I'm gonna wake up in a pool, in a bed full of your blood because you've successfully killed yourself. You need help. I said, okay, I'll go back. And I did. Came back in the rooms with that previous sponsor that I had. Picked up a white chip that Tuesday night with a huge chip on my shoulder. I'm not reading that book again. It didn't work. I'm not going to a meeting every night. It didn't work. I'm not praying to that God you claim because that didn't work. I'm not, right? Because it didn't work. So early in sobriety, I was around 60 days sober. My husband asked me for a divorce. And went and called my sponsor, and she said, honey, you're going to need a new sponsor. You're going to need someone that has more time for you. And I said, oh, okay. That really, you know, not like I have fear of abandonment or abandonment issues, right? Like, you need me, you're going to go get a new sponsor. But I did. And it was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because that second sponsor was a godsend until she fired me. She took me through the steps. Like, as fiercely and thorough as the dying could be. I spent a just ridiculous amount of time on step one. The amount of writing I had to do for step one, I mean, I still have all my step work that I've ever done since getting sober, and I'll go through it, and I'm like, oh my God, just as a reminder. And that was when I fully conceded to my innermost self. I said, oh, that's what went wrong the first time. Okay. And then we go to step two. And I'm like, listen, this whole God thing, I'm not feeling it. It's not for me. God abandoned me. My sister's God is the only God that I knew, and she was a born-again Southern Baptist. And according to her, I was going to burn in hell for all eternity because I didn't change my ways. And that was a mean, scary God. And I didn't like that God. And I was done with God. Which is another reason why I didn't stay sober, by the way. Because when it came time between me and a drink, or a drug, whatever it was, I'm not going to say. When it was time for that, I didn't have anything to help me. And so we worked really, really hard. And she finally got in my head that it's not God. It's my higher power. It's my higher power, not your higher power. My higher power. But my higher power is really cool, right? Like, spent a lot of time working on, like, what my concept is. And I can tell you right now, having my higher power that I pray to every day and knowing I'm an alcoholic has kept me sober in the hardest of times. I've actually never, I'm not gonna say never, but from what I can recall standing right here in front of you, I don't toy with the idea of picking up, because I know for me what that looks like. And even though I was a blackout drunk, I remember all of those gross feelings that I had, when I would come to and not know what was up. So for me, you know, drinking's just not an option. For me, if I pick up because life gets hard or challenging or I'm at a loss and I don't know what to do and I pick up, I deny myself the experience of getting through something sober. So the next time something happens, I know I can get through this because I got through that. And that's been my story in sobriety. You know, I've had what feels like monumental things happen in my sobriety because they happened to me, right? You know, like husband divorce, in that swoop, I lost my house, my family, my sponsor, my sense of security, and I didn't drink. You know, and then there's all these other things that have happened, and I didn't drink. And again, it's because I knew that with every new thing that comes up, I can get through this and it might hurt just a little bit less because I got through that and I got through that and I got through that, right? In the beginning, that's not the case. It's, I got to get through this and so on and so forth. But 7.5 years sober, I've had quite a few experiences that I have to get through. And I know it's going to be okay. The pain will end, right? Hold on, pain ends. So I've done a lot of cool things in sobriety. Not as cool as some people. Like, I'll hear someone's story about their sobriety, and I'm like, oh my God, I want to do that. And I know I can because I'm sober. But you know what I mean? Like, I got friends. To me, that was really cool. Like, I didn't have friends. People didn't want to keep me around for longer than a few minutes. So I have friends, and I have people. And about 3 years sober, I got fired from a job I had been at for like 5 years. So I was drinking, sober, relapsed, sober, got a promotion, and got fired. 2017 was a really hard year. I lost a lot of my friends, not to the drug or drink, but because we just didn't see eye to eye. And I had a lot of resentments. So I had to walk away from a group of people. You know, that whole fear of abandonment thing. I'm going to leave you before you leave me. And to me, as hard as that was, and here's the way I look at it. 2017, my higher power removed every single thing that I tried to put in its place. I was working too much. I got fired. I was spending too much time with these friends and not enough going to actual meetings and doing actual step work. So that all went away. You know, I was dating someone who crushed my heart in a very sad way. And then that went away. And, you know, like all of these things that I put so much value in were gone. And then I'm left with me and myself and my higher power. And I tell you what, getting getting reconnected with my higher power was probably the best thing that's ever happened to me, because again, that's what's keeping me sober. Life gets busy, life gets hard. I don't do it right, I don't do it perfect, but every morning I at least ask to stay sober. I do a third step prayer, a seven step prayer, and then there's a couple of other little prayers that I say in there. You know, something along the lines of, help me just to be kind and loving and tolerant, accepting and understanding, because this higher power that's my concept, that's what I envision of my higher power, right? Like this ultimate being that knows I am fatally flawed and doesn't stop me from making mistakes, doesn't put these walls up in front of making mistakes, but instead, I make these mistakes and it's okay. We'll get through it together, right? Because when I'm asking to use me, I'm asking for kindness and loving and tolerance. Because again, that's not me. Today, I am a 180 person. Today, I am full of empathy and love and understanding, even when I don't want to be and I want to get enraged. I've learned that when in my head, out my mouth, I get that instant gratification of I've now told you about yourself and it feels so good. And I walk away and I'm like, oh, that was bad. I owe an amends. And I have to go back and I have to eat all of those words and then I have to make it right. That to me is the worst part. So I just, pause when I'm agitated because I don't want to go back and eat my words. That's terrible. But the gifts of this program are far more than, not drinking and not drugging. They're far more than, having friends. It's a complete psychic change. I am no longer the person that I was. I am a good human being who is a productive member of society. I hold a job. I do very well at my job. I am praised at my job. I manage people who enjoy working for me. I just had an evaluation, and I got really good feedback. And I'm like, wait a minute, are you sure you're talking about me? Because I've only been in this mindset for like 3 years, and we got quite a few years in the past that say that I'm not this person you're saying, but it's true, right? Like people around me see it more than I do. That's to me the gift of the program, knowing that I never have to do anything alone again if I don't want to. I relocated down here the end of December 2019. I did not get connected, even though I knew a bunch of people through Picky Paw. I knew them from Jacksonville. I didn't get connected. COVID hit, and then we isolated, and that was built for me. Oh, I'm so good at isolating. It's amazing. It's like the best thing. But then I'm miserable. I'm awful, and then I become a bad human, and I'm like, I need meetings. But I did all of that alone by choice. So I make the decision, I don't want to do that anymore, and I get connected, and I'm not alone, right? People are at my fingertips. If I need someone right away, I can call, and they're there for me, regardless. And to me, again, that's a gift of this program. If you are new, or nearly new, or struggling, or thinking about taking a drink or a drug, don't. Give yourself that chance to get through whatever awful, uncomfortable situation you're feeling and dealing with, because this too shall pass. Nothing lasts forever. Nothing bad lasts forever. Nothing good lasts forever. So just get through things one day at a time and do it sober, because everything can be fixed. You go out, you pick up, you may not come back, and you might die. So that's all I got. Thank you for letting me share.